Hey everyone, thanks for listening. This is Steve from BJJ Mental Models. I've got a special bonus episode to share with you here today. Now, for those who don't know, BJJ Mental Models isn't the only podcast we produce. On our paid service, BJJ Mental Models Premium, we publish a whole network of podcasts covering more advanced and complex topics than we can sometimes get into on the main feed. One of those podcasts we produce is called The Highest Levels. Is hosted by multi-time black belt world champion Emily Kwok alongside her business partner and co-host Joe Hannon. Recently, we released a new episode of The Highest Levels in which Emily interviewed Marcelo Garcia. Marcelo is a personal jiu-jitsu hero of mine, and it goes without saying that he's arguably the greatest pound-for-pound grappler ever to compete in jiu-jitsu. As you're probably aware, Marcelo has also recently been battling cancer. In his chat with Emily, Marcelo had a very candid and emotional discussion about his health, his challenges during the pandemic, and the importance of operating with integrity. After listening to this episode, I don't think it should be kept behind a paywall, so I'm giving it to you for free. Please give it a listen and let me know what you think. And as always, if you want to support the creation of more content like this, please join BJJ Mental Models Premium, where you can get all episodes of The Highest Levels, plus all other content we produce. Check it out at bjjmentalmodels.com or visit the link in the show notes. With that said, it's my pleasure to introduce this incredible conversation between two jiu-jitsu legends. This is The Highest Levels, Episode 9, featuring Marcelo Garcia. Enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in again this week. This is The Highest Levels with Emily Kwok. This week, I am joined by someone who I'm so thrilled to have on as a guest. And not only is this person someone that I have looked up to greatly in my life, but I'm sure this individual is someone that you all know. He's known to be one of the greatest of all time, probably the greatest of all time, pound for pound, in terms of what he's been able to accomplish, not only as one of the world's best competitors and athletes, but also being known as one of the most wonderful coaches and individuals who spreads the love of jiu-jitsu. He's, I think, maybe the humblest black belt I've ever met. And he spreads a lot of joy when it comes to being able to practice his heart, his art. And I've had the pleasure of knowing him for over a decade, coming up under him at his school, and very proudly happy to represent him as well. And thank you very much for joining me this week, Marcelo Garcia.
Thank you, Amy. That makes him just blush.
So this audience, I think, is going to be so excited to hear from you because we don't often get to listen to you speak. You know, many people are familiar with you teaching. Many people are very familiar with you performing and being an athlete. But something that I've really enjoyed is with the rise of podcasts, it's really nice to be able to learn and listen more to the history and the experience of athletes like yourself. And although I didn't spend every day the last 14 years in your school, I have spent a considerable amount of time being able to sit and learn from you and observe you. And so I've been able to hear some of your amazing stories, but I'm super glad to have you as a guest to discuss so much of your unique experience as an athlete, because this show has been concentrating on what it means to perform at the highest levels. And I don't know anyone better than to talk about something like this than yourself. Many people know some of your history in terms of how you became an athlete. I would love if you want to discuss a little bit about why it's been meaningful for you to continue training jiu-jitsu and perform at the highest levels. What has jiu-jitsu meant for you? Why did you pursue it so much?
Oh, and I really appreciate it to be able to talk, you know, and especially when you have people to listen to us, just to listen to our story, to our experience. But I'm someone that I like to talk. I like to take my time. I like to give my time. I like to listen to people. But I always wait to people to ask for my opinion. And I have really hard time to go online and just express myself, you understand? But every time somebody asks my opinion, asks my thoughts, like I love to share them, you know. Especially about something that means so much to me was jiu-jitsu, you know. And obviously, like, I can go really far just talk about that. But I think I did a really good choice, Emily, to take jiu-jitsu as something that gives me like a direction in life. It's not just like about make a living. It's not just about break a sweat or maybe get in shape. It's just like it gives me a really good meaning in life, because we need some purpose, you know. And I think that's exactly what Jiu-Jitsu has given to me this whole time. Since I was very young, since I was just a teenager, that phase that you just kind of like, you don't know what's going to happen, you don't know what you want to do, you kind of lost. So that was just like a good direction in life. That's what Jiu-Jitsu means. And that's why it means so much to me. And I really take this, I don't take that easy. You know what I mean? I really appreciate all this, you know?
I think what's been really commendable in my experience of you, though, Marcelo, is that you never, it felt like there was never any other choice. And I think for so many people, including myself, there were things that were like, you know, people would say are safer. You should get a job. You should work in this type of place. You should go to school. It's very scary to decide that you want to pursue something like jiu-jitsu, especially when you were learning jiu-jitsu and coming up. It still wasn't as big of a sport as it is today. Like, to think about what it's doing today and when you started, it's grown so much. What gave you the feeling or the confidence to pursue jiu-jitsu at such a young age when most people have no idea what they want to do? Why did it speak to you?
I mean, I don't know if you feel the same, but just give me a confidence, you know? Confidence of like, maybe I'm able to make a leap with that, you know? A confidence that like, I think this has helped me to feel good about myself. Do you understand? Like, and when you talk about make those decisions, like, I didn't have that many good options, you know? All the options was really poor beside like the jiu-jitsu. What I'm trying to say, poor, like all the options that I have in life come from where I come from. I never felt that like the sparkling in my eyes. I never have a spark in my eyes when I thought about that. You understand? So jiu-jitsu was very easy once I was able to have a little bit of a taste of. You understand?
Was it training in general? Was it just being able to learn and practice, or was it competition? Like, what made you catch fire? What made you decide that this is continuing to make me feel better and better about myself?
Since the beginning, Emily, jiu-jitsu makes me feel alive. Do you understand? And when I say alive, like I felt like I have a place in the world. And when I say I have a place, like I was able to connect to people and in a much deeper way than before. And I'm talking about like a young age. I'm talking about like a 12, 13 years old, that age that you feel like you don't know anything. You think you know, you think you have like adult thoughts, but you don't have any like sure of anything. You understand? Like, you start to feel like, maybe I wanna do this. Maybe I wanna be somebody like that. Maybe I wanna do this as a profession. Or maybe would be good one day to raise a family, but you're still very young. You start to have those thoughts, but you're just not sure of anything. So it's just like a really like giving that sense of like, people pay attention to me. Oh, this kind of like, I enjoy to do this. Do you understand? So like, it was just like so many options compared to the other options. Like, for example, if I want to choose another profession in my hometown, if I have to choose a college, I would have to do like a history, you know what I mean? Or maybe Portuguese class. Do you understand? Like, that was not something that like I felt like I want to do that. Do you understand? So there was not that many options.
So if we fast forward a little bit to the moments that you start competing and getting a taste for what it is to show the world how much you love jiu-jitsu, I would be interested to know when... You know, I've spoken to many people about this idea of, as students, when we're learning something in the beginning, we have no choice but to learn and imitate what our teachers show us. And a lot of times we don't know what we know yet, right? So like, for example, when I started training with you many years ago, I didn't know what single leg X guard was. I didn't really play that much X guard. And Tachi, your wonderful wife, who is a wonderful friend to me, said, you know, Emily, you should try single leg X guard. I think it's going to be hard for a lot of the girls to beat or to play. They don't really know what it is. But it takes a long time when we're learning something to know it inside, to internalize it. And one of the things that I think people think is probably very remarkable about your career is just how dominant your style of jiu-jitsu is and how you know what you know. When did you start feeling a lot of confidence that you really knew the movements and you could have your own style of jiu-jitsu and you could become the best competitor in the world? Because I think that this is a very difficult thing. The moment from when we stop imitating or trying to do a game and we make the game our own. And I think your style and your movement is so distinct.
Emily, I think just now I have a better opinion on that, way better than before. And what I'm trying to say, like now I realize a lot of the things that happen that make me understand better the techniques than my opponents, for example. And I was very lucky to always have like good people around me. What I'm trying to say, good people, like all my instructors, mentors, and friends, the training partners, right? But at the same time, Emily, I don't have that all the time. I used to have like a training partner that I used to go to their cities to do one role, one section, one weekend, things like that. And then the whole next week, I was by myself. So that made me have to think a lot by myself. So I spent a lot of time just trying to figure it out by myself. Obviously, I cannot train by myself most of the time, but I'm talking about like I'm going somewhere. I train with my instructor. I train with my teacher. I have a two class with him, and then I come back to my hometown. And in my hometown, I get like two or three people. I have to go pick up them in their house, and they are literally like a complete beginner, and I have to just try teach them something so I can learn. And in that moment, like they start training a little bit with me, and then I have to put myself in the position to try and understand. So it was a lot of like stuff that I imitated from my instructors, but later on, I was by myself a lot, trying to figure out all the techniques. So I think like those two combinations was perfect for me, if you understand me.
Yeah, I mean, I think of that as being sort of subjective. Like in the subjective, we're doing it ourselves and that's what we feel. And then it sounds like when you are teaching, and a lot of people say that when they begin teaching jiu-jitsu, it helps them understand jiu-jitsu better. And I think it's because we have to objectify. We have to imagine it outside of ourselves and try to make it make sense for someone else. And I think going between the subjective and the objective helps us connect to the art much better. And I totally understand what you're saying. But it sounds like you had to do this from a very early age. So that cycle, that system was probably much more developed than most people.
But I mean, I didn't know that 10 years ago. If you asked me like 10 years ago, I was like, oh, I was just training hard. I was just like doing this or doing that. Just 10 years ago, I realized like I have something that some of my opponents didn't have to. Most of the time when I coming up, growing up like in jiu-jitsu, I always felt like, why I don't have a teacher every day? Why I don't have like a class that I can just go and join the class? Why I have to be by myself now picking up like a train partners to try make like a couple rounds? I was kind of upset about that. But then just now I realized in the last like 5-10 years, I realized like that's what makes my technique like a more development. So I was just very lucky because there was no setup or anything. So today I try to use that on my students. You understand? Before I used to think like we just are trained. Today I think different, you know. I want them to think by themselves too, not just like listen to me.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think also the time in which you started jiu-jitsu, and I started, you know, a little later than you did, but for people who are starting jiu-jitsu today, there's so much more jiu-jitsu and there's so much more support. But in your situation, you had to really be accountable. You had to really want to train jiu-jitsu to train jiu-jitsu. If you wanted it to be easy, you probably wouldn't learn. But today we have a lot of students that want everything to be given to them. You know, they have instructionals, they have private lessons, they have classes, they have specialty classes if they want. What do you feel for as a teacher and also as a longtime student, what do you feel would help students get better faster? Because I think a lot of students come and they believe that if I just come to class 3 times a week or if I come to class 5 times a week, I'm just going to get better. How does a student begin to start thinking about their jiu-jitsu more, especially if they're in a school or an environment where they offer a lot? They have so much more today, you know? How do we not be lazy about our learning?
Emily, just before I answer have you heard about like when people say like, if you want to somebody don't learn anything, just teaching everything. You understand? Like just showing everything, they're not going to learn anything because it's just too much, you know? I feel like it's a little bit what happened today. You search like a YouTube video, you get so much. And then you want to learn one thing, but then you end up see another thing because that thing leads to another thing. And then suddenly you're not studying any one of them because you got so much information. I think that's part of the problem. I mean, you just get so much and we don't study like a one thing. We don't specialize in one thing. But what happened with me was a lot of about like I didn't have that many options. So I have to really like do things by myself. And what I'm trying to say by myself, like after those rounds that I got my friends, that I tried my best to have a hard train, to be able to like have some difficult. I don't know if you ever heard about, they say that Hickson used to train with people with their hands tied on their belt. So even that, I was try because all the other people that have so much less technique than me, I was try those things, right? But then what I think that was the most that I did by myself was like, I was just keep thinking. When I say think of it, like what happened that day, what kind of move was my favorite move today that I did in train, which move I thought that when I did works well with no technique, with no like a strength and most technique, like which move was a perfect time today that I did. And like the person, even he tried resist was not enough. So I did a lot of those thought by myself. When I say thought by myself, not that I developed anything by myself, but I was just like by myself thinking. And unfortunately, many times I was in school, you know, I was in a school, try to learn something besides jiu-jitsu, but all I could think in my mind was jiu-jitsu. So I was there, the chair, I'm watching the class, but I was just thinking about like which move I'm going to try today, which move like I want to repeat from yesterday, which move I don't want to do at all. Because yesterday was bad, the result wasn't good. Like, I remember yesterday I put my hand like in the knee, and then I end up kind of get cut in like a omoplata or something. So today I was like, oh, so I cannot do that. So those are the thoughts that I used to do so much by myself. So I think maybe a lot of people, they just don't have the time or they don't have the focus to after a class, after a section. They should really go over the details that they just happened to them.
Yeah, I think I always relate to this feeling in the past. I've had to work on it a lot, but I used to feel like if someone corrected me, you know, if someone gave me feedback, I felt like it meant that I did it wrong or that I was bad at it. And it felt bad, you know. Now I look at feedback as, oh, this is a way that I can improve. You know, like nothing changed outside of my mindset. Like I just decided to look at more feedback as more information to make the technique better, as opposed to feedback being a judgment that you're not good at doing it. And so I think that a lot of us, I noticed like for newer or younger students, sometimes when like I try to go and give them a little bit of feedback, I can feel this in them, that they think that I'm trying to criticize their technique. But a lot of it is just trying to give them more so that they can think about it deeply, or they can think about it a different way. Because a lot of people learn, but they don't think, if that makes sense. Like I think a lot of people just do it, but they don't stop to really think about why they did it this way. What's going to happen next? How come it didn't work better, you know, this time than last time? And to your point, I think my best moments training and learning jiu-jitsu was when I had a really supportive group of people that would help me think about all of these things. So it's an interesting point of like doing your own thinking around your jiu-jitsu, because I think for a lot of us, we think, oh, if I just come and I practice the move enough, I'm just going to learn it and it's going to be great. But from what you're saying, it sounds like to really understand the movement deeply, it's very important that you have your own thoughts and your own interpretation of it. And I think also that's probably what makes it unique for you, right? It's not just any armbar, but it's the armbar, the way that you do it specially.
Do you understand those armbar and came with a lot of like scenarios and situations, you understand? That's why it makes me like really remember them, you understand?
Yes. When you think about what it takes to be the greatest fighter, you know, like I think that there's probably a lot of people, whether they are hobbyists and, you know, they have a job or they're studying and they're doing jiu-jitsu as seriously as they can on the side, or they have decided to do everything for jiu-jitsu and they want to be a world champion. What are some qualities? What are some things that people need to be mindful of? First thing that comes to mind for you is just you're all in. You're 100% committed to investing yourself in the process of learning and training. But what are some other things that you see in athletes or that you recognize in yourself that maybe is not so obvious?
Emily, we can talk about a lot of good things, right? About hard work, like a persistent, you know. You got to look to the bright side, obviously, you know, all those things. But one thing that I don't see people think or exercising a lot, and I realize today, is, you know, I think I did a lot more than other people, is like manage my ego. Because especially when you want to win, you have a type of ego where you cannot let the ego controls you. And I think like I was most about the technique and the learn than just win a training or just kind of like don't tap today. And I think I did that a lot. I used the ego to make me train because I don't want to lose. I want to have the most chance to win the next tournament. But I didn't let the ego stop me to learn that day, that moment. Like, for example, if I'm stuck in a position, and I'm literally stuck in the position, if I move, I tap, or maybe I escape, or maybe I can just wait till the time runs out and something happens, or maybe I can just wait for my opponent to get tired. I can just wait for him to get tired. But I don't want to count to my opponent to get tired. I don't want to wait and lose that time that we have left, maybe 30 seconds left. I prefer to try get out, even if I tap, but at least I figure out if I would tap or not. At least I'll figure out if that choice that I make was a good choice or not. So I feel like that's what I'm trying to explain about like the ego thing.
I think that's a really beautiful point. I would say, I think sometimes our egos also, they get in the way of us even trying something because we're afraid if I try this, I'm going to lose. And I think for so many people when they're learning, especially early, you're always losing, right? Like it's very hard as a white belt or a blue belt. You always feel like, oh, everybody's going to smash me. Oh, everybody's going to get on top of me. Sometimes when they can do one thing right, they want to keep doing the one thing right because it helps them feel like at least they're learning something. So how do you speak to like somebody early in their journey who is getting beat all the time? And maybe when they hit like a 4-stripe white belt or a blue belt, they can do two or three things good. Sometimes I call this the blue belt, black belt. Like they do like a triangle or something really, really well and they do it to everybody, but then they don't want to try anything else because they're worried that if they do, they're going to lose. What advice do you give to somebody who sometimes they need to win a little bit so that they don't give up? Like how should somebody work through this?
Emily, this is what I just said. Like, don't think it was easy. You know? I mean, even for me, it was very painful.
Yeah.
Like if I end up tapping, I was upset. I was like, frustrated. I was like, but then I realized, okay, now I learned if I get out this way, I'll tap. So next time I better do different, or maybe next time don't put myself over there. Right. So it is tough. It's painful. It's not fun. But what I could say to somebody like that is like, Emily, there's always someone worse than us. I believe, you know what I mean? Obviously, partners, right? If there's only two people, maybe you're going to be stuck with those two partners forever. And that's hard, you understand? Because I've been in those situations. But I always believe it's going to have somebody worse than us. But if you can choose, you do like a half of the training with people better than you and half of the training with people like with less technique than you. I think that's a good option. I mean, don't just go with people that are just going to beat you up. But then at the same time, don't go with just with people that are going to give you like an easy train. If you can split up that in half and half in the beginning, that's great. I think that's what I would say to a white belt or a stripes. Do you understand?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. What has the difference been for you being the best athlete or being the most dedicated athlete and then deciding to become a coach and a teacher? And I think that there, for me, there's a difference between being a coach and a teacher, and you do both very well. What's been the difference for you in those roles, and what have you enjoyed about it, and what has been hard for you?
Emily, be a coach was not much my option or my choice. That just came like as a situation. You understand? Like right from the beginning, I told you, like as a blue belt, I was already teaching to my friends. I was already teaching with people in my hometown. So I wish I was just trained. I wish I have a coach me and just make me train instead of teaching. So right from the beginning, it was not much my option. That was just like the only one that I had. It was not an option that I took. And later on, I always felt like, I want to make a leave of jiu-jitsu. So I want to use all the opportunities that I have to make a leave. So I realized, I have to teach. I have to try to build a school in case, like, I cannot leave over tournaments. Especially back in the days, you definitely cannot leave from just win at tournaments or a prize, right? So I realized, I have to teach. But then, very soon, as a black belt, I realized, that teaching, like, really, really, like, make me learn more. Really make me learn more what I was already know how to do, but at least, like, I learned better now. And then from that, learning better make me learn something else. Because once you understand, I believe, Emily, I just believe on that. Once you learn one thing, it's very easy to transfer for another thing. It's kind of like the same path. It's not the same technique. But you remember how many hours, you remember how much hard work, how much sweat you put in this technique. You just have to choose another one and put the same amount of time. Obviously, it's another whole work that you're going to have to do to build again and try to learn another technique. But that's how it is. And I just learned that once I was very precise about what I already know. Like when I learned this really well, I start teaching that. And then when I start teaching that, I run this really well because I have to teach that like a thousand times to a thousand people. But then after that, I was like, now I understand way better what I used to do. What I used to do, but I am not used to be able to teach that. Now I'm able to teach. Okay, so now I understand in so many different layers and different ways what I just used to do. Now I can teach. Now I can explain. So now I know what I used to do very well. And then what I do, now that I know this very well, now I really can transfer that to another technique, to something else. And that was always like my path. I was like, once I learned something good, I was like, now I know this north-south choke. Okay, now what can I do better? Or what can I do like a different? What can I do near this north-south choke? I was like, let me just try a guillotine. So I started doing the guillotine. So it's always like move on from what I have learned. Do you understand?
Yes. You've always done that really well. I mean, I'm not sure that there's a fighter that's ever done that better than you, being able to continue to evolve, and so quickly, because it's almost like you learn something and then you release it. And I remember so many years ago, we were walking to lunch or dinner, and I asked you, how did you decide on this game? Like, why this game, not some other game? And you said, because I tried everything else and this is what works best now, you know? And I believe it.
My opponents have showed you me, you understand? Like, I have tried against them and they show like, this is not going to work.
Yeah, but it's like, talk about humility. I think it's one of the biggest qualities that people love you for is the amount of humility you have, because you're always willing to try something new You're always experimenting. You're always letting go of what you know. You're not afraid to test yourself. And that doesn't just show on the mats, but I think in terms of your demeanor and your character, people are always so surprised. I remember working with Tachi at your school, and so many people would just come and be so surprised that you were so kind to them. I think it's something that people love about you is your smile and the fact that you're very warm and you want to shake hands with them and you welcome them into your space. And I think that they're surprised by that, because people probably think you've done so much, you've earned so many titles. If anybody, you deserve to sit on a throne, but you still continue to try to do something different. And I'm not sure if people always get the opportunity to know you more deeply, to understand how hungry you are to continue your learning and spreading your love of jiu-jitsu. But that humility and that joy, that love for what you do, I think it speaks to how much jiu-jitsu you know and also how deeply you do it. And I know you've said many times before, I think I love jiu-jitsu the best. And I don't think too many people disagree with that. In your time being a coach, I've also seen you change a lot, you know, and evolve a lot. And what would you say you've learned the most? I mean, when I met you in New York, it was like 2009, 2010. I know you were in New York earlier than that. But in the time that you've had your academy, what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned as a coach?
Oh, Emily, it was so many, Emily. And but what you just say about like all the things that was very easy for me, Emily, because I just enjoy so much. Do you understand? I just enjoy just so much. It was very easy for me to just share with everybody. Every time somebody walks to my gym that wants to train with me, make me remind how hard it was in the beginning to have people to train with me. So when they walk in and they want to train with me, like that was very easy to just like be kind and be nice to them, because they just come to learn something that I enjoy. I have so much passion, right? So that was something that I always felt like a very easy to share with people, because it's something that makes me feel so good. I just felt like, oh, I want to share this with you guys, because maybe you guys will have the same feeling that I have, right?
Yeah, but it's also, I don't know if you know this, but it's for someone like myself, you know, when I came to your gym, I had some really bad experiences. And one of the things that I remember the most about training with you very early on was that your energy and the culture of your school felt very pure. Like it felt like it was really just about the love of jiu-jitsu, and it was so refreshing and it was very healing. I think if I had not met you and if I had not been able to train in an environment like that, I would have a very different relationship to jiu-jitsu, because in your experience, you've managed to take all of the difficult things that happened to you and you've decided to think about how it's made you grateful for everything that you have. But I think for a lot of people training jiu-jitsu, if there's, you know, some drama or something bad happens, because there's a lot of bad things that happen to us, it's very easy for us to look the wrong way or to feel badly about what it is that we're doing. You know, before I came to your school, I almost quit because I thought, oh, I don't want to deal with the headache. I started doing this for fun. It's not fun for me anymore. And when I came to your school, it really changed the way I felt about jiu-jitsu. And I'm very grateful for that, because what feels easy to you was so hard for me. And so I don't know if you know that, but like it means a lot. You know, it means a lot for that you've been able to have all of those lessons, and that it's made you spread your love of jiu-jitsu and help other people connect to the sport even more. I'm not sure if you know that, but I wanted to say that because it meant so much to me when I met you.
I remember you mentioned all these things to me, and I really appreciate that. But that was the truth. It was like a very pure what I was trying to do there. I was just trying to just teach what I know, you understand? And I was very happy that everything that I was teaching was working for me, and I just want people to be able to learn from that, you understand? Especially because, Emily, I didn't went to college. I didn't learn how to teach. I didn't went to a place to learn how to teach. So everything was just like doing right and make mistakes and learn from your mistakes. And I think like I'm one of those people that I try to learn a lot from my mistakes, and I try to do different. A lot of people used to tell me that, like, one thing that I do well in jiu-jitsu is that, like, when I make one mistake, I most of the time don't try and make the same mistake twice, right? So I'm very comfortable to learn from my mistakes. You understand? I don't like to just kind of like think, oh, this is not gonna happen again. Or that was just like a fluke. This was just like luck or my opponents. Like, I really try to learn from my mistakes. And when you ask me like what I have changed with my students in my learn, like I have learned so much from my mistakes, and I'm still trying like especially today with my teaching. I have learned so much in the last like 20 years, and I have do a lot of things right, and I have do a lot of things wrong, and I believe I still have a lot to teach, like based on like things that I did wrong that I'm trying to do different now. You understand?
Wow, it's interesting for me to have seen you throughout different stages in your life, and to also recognize things that have changed. And I guess it's silly for any of us to think that one will never change, but it's beautiful to see how not just your jiu-jitsu experiences, but your life experiences have made you evolve in the way that you have. And like, I remember when I first started training at your school, it was much smaller and it was a very tight group of people. And a lot of people that came to train with you at the time, you were still, you know, at the competing quite a bit. I remember how much we all traveled together. And stylistically, so many of us training with you at the time really tried to embody your game. You know, probably the person that did it the most at the time was John Sataba. But as time went on, and you had Inhiki, and you had obviously Paul Schreiner and Batista and Bernardo, and you know, now you have Scott and Joel, all these people that have come up through your system. Now when I go to your school, the training is so different, but it's so beautiful, and it's the style has grown in so many different ways. What has it been like to see that growth within your student body? Like, did you see it? Did you know that it was happening? Did you want it to happen? Because I think when you were still competing a lot, it was everybody just wanted to be like you. And then when you started inviting all these different coaches and their style and their influence was felt in the school, it created a whole other feeling and a whole other system. I wonder what that felt like for you as that evolved.
Emily, that was definitely not planning. I wasn't planning that, you understand? But like I mentioned to you, like how much I learned from my mistakes. And when I talk my mistakes, like my mistakes that I do in train, I do a train, I make a mistake. I was like, oh, I can't let this happen again. I need to fix this. I need to organize this better. I need to find another way. Let me just like think more, right? So that happened also with my teaching. Like you asked me before about like what was the challenge between the teaching and then still competing. That was a big challenge for me, Emily. Like everything was working for me. And I realized like, if I teach my students everything I know, everything I do is going to work for them. And all I want to is like the same or even more success that I have to my students. Because I believe they can go farther than me, because today they have, I always felt like, oh, they have me now, so I can just guide them. So that's what I used to feel before. But then later on, I realized like, okay, it's not that easy. Like my students, they are not me. They have a different body type. They have a different mentality. They learn different, Emily. I used to learn so much with some of the students, they don't want to learn with pain. They don't want to learn the mistake. I need to find another way to teach them the same thing. Or I need to find another way to teach them something different than I do. And that's kind of part of my learning. And that came later, you know. That came from the beginning. But I don't feel bad about them, because all I want to is the success of my students. All I want is them to have the same great feeling that I told, that is very easy for me, that I enjoy so much. I want them to have that. You understand? So, and didn't work like perfect. So I have to evolve and try to do some change. And today I have definitely like a much different mentality than before. I don't know if that like makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense. Something that I'm curious about is actually like training at your school and training under you. I think for myself and for a lot of people that I observed over the years, we all put pressure on ourselves, you know, like we all want to perform well. And I remember when I was competing a lot under you in the adult divisions, I used to feel really ashamed if I didn't perform and win. And part of that was because I felt like, you know, the love and the appreciation and the time that you put into training everybody, I wanted to show you and I wanted to show the rest of the team that I wasn't a waste of time and that I could do the jiu-jitsu and I was going to try to do it at my best. I realized that you or my training partners didn't think that I was a terrible athlete or a terrible jiu-jitsu fighter if I didn't win. I realized that the pressure was something I just put on myself. And I see this a lot. And I know it's not anything that you can help, but when someone like yourself is coaching and teaching, how do you think people should deal with the pressure that they put on themselves or they think about performing? Because I think for so many people, we don't want to disappoint our teachers and we don't want to disappoint our teammates. And I know now, being a teacher as well, like I'm never disappointed in my students if they try their hardest and they lose. I consider it an experience for us to be able to learn from. But for some people, it means so much. And like, what advice or what do you have to say about the pressure that we put on ourselves?
Emily, there's so much thought about this, you know what I mean? And I completely see what you just say. Like, that make a total sense. A lot of people care. A lot of people put so much more weight on their back than they can care or than they should be caring. They shouldn't be carrying that much pressure. Yes. And but what's good for me, Emily, to have a coach, and I don't want to disappoint him. You understand? That was the one thing that was good for me. But Emily, if you have a good coach, if you have a good training partner, if you have friends around you, you're never going to disappoint them. You understand? You're never going to disappoint them. So basically, like, it's good to feel that you want to perform as good. You want to do your best because there's people outside, right? Because there's your coach screaming for you. Because your training partners is still there after they compete. They still cheer up for you. But you should never feel that you're going to disappoint them. You understand? Like, it's good to try to do something for all the people too, but they don't care the pressure that you will disappoint them. So when my coach was outside, every time I heard his scream, oh, I always felt like, oh, I'm getting tired. As soon as I heard his voice, I was like, okay, I got to do something. Every time my wife was outside coaching me, because she went many times to my tournament. When I hear somebody outside like screaming for me, I was like, okay, I have to do something right now. So I always took that pressure on my favor. But I mean, when I realized like, okay, today wasn't a good day. Today I lost. Today I make mistake. Today, like everything went wrong. I don't make that pressure hurts me more because it was already painful enough. You understand? To lose that match, for example. So when I come home, when I'm leaving the gymnasium, when I'm still there getting stuff ready, like I don't let that hurt me more because it's already too much. It was already like, I wish to win. I didn't win. And now I'm leaving, and then why are I going to start to feel like, oh, how many people I disappoint today? Or if these people tomorrow, they're going to be nice to me or not? You understand? So I take the pressure, but I just take as much as makes me work harder and not make me hurt myself more. I don't know if you're clear about that, but I can literally like share with you how many times like I realized that, okay, I lost. It's literally like the end. Lost. There's no other option. I cannot go back there and fix what just happened right now. And then immediately I was like, oh, that sucks. Like now everybody's going to look at me this way. And then I realized like, oh, wait a minute. I'm going like in a really wrong direction. This is going to make me feel upset about what I'm already upset. And immediately I start to feel like, oh, no, let me just start thinking about what can I do better next time? What can I work with? And most of the time, Emily, I just, one thing that unfortunately not many people like to do, I take full responsibility for my loss. That's something that like, if you can do that, I feel like you can fix that. When you blame somebody else, you cannot fix because you think it's somebody. But when you blame yourself, they realize like, okay, I make the mistakes. I did this. I think I did that. I think I can get better on this. So let me just try to fix that because it's all my fault. So based on that, it's very easy for you to start to fix. But when you blame somebody else, you just feel like you don't have to fix, you don't have to change anything, right? Because it's somebody else's fault. You understand? So most of the time, I just don't feel hurt. I just don't feel I want to hurt myself more with a bad thought. But immediately, I start to feel like, okay, I definitely did something wrong. So I need to figure out what I did something wrong. What was? I didn't sleep well last night. I didn't cut weight right. Or I could be trained a little bit more. What happened? Maybe it takes a week to start to figure out what went wrong. Maybe it's still going to take a month to try adjust your train. But I feel like that's what makes me like keep moving instead of like be stuck in something that could just like lead in a wrong direction.
So, speaking of which, when you are fighting, what are you thinking or what are you doing that allows you to perform? And what I mean by that is I remember a time when I would go to compete, I would have in my mind all the things that I wanted to do. And I felt like I was very tight because of that. And when I say tight, I don't mean tight good. I just mean like I had like the, let's just say like 10 moves that I wanted to do. And I kept telling myself, this is what I'm going to do. This is my game plan. This is how the match is going to go. And I found that it was very difficult for me this way because I put a lot of stress and pressure on myself. And if something didn't go right, it was very hard for me to be flexible and do the jiu-jitsu that I knew because I told myself I'm only going to do these things, like these 10 things to help me win the match. And as I matured and became a different competitor, and particularly for me after having children, for me, there was something about having children that made me take more pressure off myself, maybe because jiu-jitsu was important, but it wasn't the only thing in my life at that point. And it helped me open up a lot more. And so when I started going back to compete after 2018, my approach mentally was much more to be present, to not think about all the things that I should force myself to do, but to go and enjoy the moment and be grateful that I was there, and then to like release all the jiu-jitsu that I knew if I could. What do you think, or what were you thinking when you would go out and perform? Were you feeling anything, or did you have a way that you had to perform? Like, what is the mindset that you go into competition with?
Mate, Emily, this is what you told makes total sense, right? You have 10 moves. That's great. You wanna have like a plan, right? You wanna have like a vision. When I say a vision, like which takedown you wanna begin your match, or how you see finish this opponent that you have in front of you. Like, oh, I think I can see a finish like with bow and arrow choke, right? So you have your favorite moves. It's good to have that in your mind, Emily. It's really good. That's a good plan. But obviously, you have to be ready to improvise if something goes wrong. Okay, that's part of the plan too. Something goes wrong, something doesn't go as a plan, you have to improvise, and you can. You don't have a plan every day when you roll, right? So if something goes wrong, you can improvise. But at the same time, Emily, that moment before the match, when I say the moment before, I'm not talking about just 2 minutes, just 5 minutes. I'm talking about 5 hours before your match. I'm talking about the night before your match. I'm talking about the week before your match. Like sometimes if you just get stuck, think about do 10 moves, Emily, your mind starts to get real like tight. You start to feel like, oh, I'm stuck on this. I don't think I can function right. I don't think my thoughts is being productive. I think there's a lot more things to go wrong now that I'm just thinking about those 10 moves, right? So I feel like one thing that works for me, like, and that comes later in life, I literally start thinking about everything else that I want to do in the tournament. Like, it's just a little bit of like a recipe that I do that works really well for me. And I think there's a way to get your mind off of like a bad thought. When I say bad thoughts, it's those thoughts that like, put too much pressure on you. You understand? So I like imagine like the night before when I go to sleep, you cannot just think about moves right now, right? Because like, you want to go to sleep. You cannot think about like how much you're going to squeeze a choke. You're about to go to sleep. You know what I mean? So many times, instead of thinking about the moves I want to do tomorrow, I start thinking about like what I'm going to do tomorrow for breakfast. How how I'm going to walk to the tournament, like what I'm going to do once I get inside there. So those things that really keep your mind busy, and you really vision yourself like in the next day. So I think I was good to do that. I used to do that a lot, and that helped me a lot. And as soon that I get there, like in the tournament, I start to try to relax my mind and think about the moves that I want to do. But then right away, Emily, I start getting nervous. I start to feel my heart beat hard because I'm start putting myself in the fight mode. I start to imagine myself in the middle of the match. Soon I start to think about the moves, how I want to do the moves. My heart start to be really hard, and then right away I stop it. I stop and I try to calm myself down, and that happened many times. As soon as I start thinking about the moves I want to do, my heart rate start going really hard. And then what I do after, I was like, okay, let's just start thinking about something else. Then completely change my mind right now, because I already did. I already thought what I want to do. So now then just let myself just relax, think about something else, complete something else. And then you start thinking about okay, soon they're going to call me. I'm going to hear my name. Don't get nervous. You're going to hear your name soon. So don't get surprised when they call your name, because you don't want to, I was kind of get called by surprise. And then that kind of usually hits your heart when they call you on the speakers, for example. So I start to feel okay, soon they're going to call my name. So don't get surprised. So I start thinking about those stuff. And that's a lot. That's a lot that we can think that kind of guide us, Emily, to what we want to do.
Amazing. I'd love to spend a little bit of time talking about the incredible challenges you've faced in the last couple of years. I mean, actually more than a couple of years. Let's even go back to COVID, how challenging that was. You know, this was, I don't know, Marcelo, was this the hardest 5 year, it's been, you've had to fight a lot of battles. And I'd love to know your thoughts on how this has affected you as a person, what you've learned from these bigger fights that you've been fighting, and what it's like to be, I don't want to say on the other side, because we never know what else is coming, but you've just gone through so much. And how do you feel today? And what do you think about when you look back at what's happened in your life the last 5 to 10 years?
Emily, I don't know if it makes sense for everybody, but I like to talk about my challenge. Yes, I like to share my thoughts. I like to share my weakness. You know what I mean? I like to share my strong points. I like to share my turnaround. You know what I'm saying? I think those stuff makes me feel good when I'm able to face that and expose that. And I respect some people, maybe they don't like to talk about that. You know what I mean? But for me, it makes me feel good. And I think is a chance that you have to make that feel normal, because you can talk about it. I feel like less you talk about, more a normal it is. So I think I like to make that feel normal. And it definitely wasn't easy. I mean, when COVID hits, it was just sucks not be able to train. I was literally not able to train because I was afraid of my daughter, because she has a special needs. When she was born, she's normal now, but when she was born, she has a lot of she stayed on the NICU for a long time, right? So I have a lot of those fears, and end up losing her brother when she was born. Her twin Joey was really hard too, because that makes me feel even more weak, because now I'm more afraid, because I know you can lose something very special. I know that's that is an option that could happen. You know what I mean? So that makes the COVID much, much stronger than for other people, right? And that's just how I felt. I felt a lot of people around me that wasn't feel that fear, but I was. And I need to go over that. But at the same time, I was respecting everybody, because not everybody went through what I went through, and they went through a different challenge than mine. And I have to respect that. You understand? But at the same time, I have to deal with my own problems too, right? But then at the same time, Emily, that was not the first challenge. I have another challenge before that, you know, and obviously that was a really big one, but I don't think we can measure our fights, you know what I mean, because every fight is difficult for us. So I was just a very positive thinking about okay, I have all the challenges before. I didn't know how that was going to end and didn't end up perfect. Okay, we have to make a little arrangement, but end up like solving the problem, end up figuring out, okay, so I hope this one is going to go like the same way. I hope like with some more time, like a little bit more time, we'll figure that out. I feel like I learned to go that way. I feel like based on the problems that I had before, and then they get solved, not exactly the same, the exact way that I wished to, but then they got solved, they got settled, they got figured out. Every time I face another problem, I feel like, okay, this sucks. This is terrible. It's awful right now. Okay, but I think there's a chance this is going to turn around very soon. I think there's a chance like things are going to get better. And I always feel like based on what happened before, like we can the same way how we win and we figure out a fight before, like the next fight, the one that we're dealing right now, like we're going to get sold. That's like how I deal with all those things that like I went through, and I believe we're still going to go through.
What was it like for you in the last couple of years as you've been fighting cancer? There was a period of time where you couldn't do anything physical. And for someone who has lived your entire life being so energized and always moving, how did that feel for you?
Emily, it was sucks. And I wish I have shared more of my pain. But I always feel I don't want people have to care my pain. You understand? Like I wish I could just have shared like how hard it was, like my chemos, because it was hard, it was sucks. But especially because I was afraid, okay, maybe all the people think it's be easy for me. Maybe all the people is going through chemo right now, just like me. And maybe they think like, oh, why Marcel is not going through the same problem that I'm going through? Why he's not sharing like how sucks it is, like how it's been for me. So I felt that challenge. I was like, how much should I share my pain, but how much people wants to hear me complain about my pain right now? So it was a lot. So I was trying, I was like staying the positive side, but was sucks for me too, you understand? And, but at the same time, I want to share right now, especially now that everything has passed, and I've been I did my cancer scan and I've been clear for 6 months. Obviously has passed, but I can't wait for the 1 year scan and then be clear for that. But I want to let people know that was hard for me too. But I just choose to look to the bright side and don't share much more like how hard it was being. Even I felt like I want to talk about it, but I just felt like I want you people to know that was not just with them. You know, I was going through a lot, you know, and I respect so much everybody that went through things even worse than mine. But I just want you people to know that wasn't just so easy, and I wish to have shared that, but then I realized like, what kind of level, how much people wants to hear like my problems. Do you understand?
I can understand that. Although I feel there was so much love and support for you in the jiu-jitsu community, and I'm sure as you've shared all of the, you know, triumphs in your life, that, you know, people always say you can tell a good friend because they're there for you when you win, and they're also there for you when you lose. And I think for many people, they wanted to be able to show you that they were there for you. You know, like I think for everyone that came up to me, and I know that, you know, I don't have regular contact with you on a regular basis, but so many people were like, oh my gosh, if you talk to Marcelo or if you see him, please tell him my thoughts and prayers are with him. And so many people wanted to give you their thoughts and their love and their appreciation. Because I think for many people, we can't even fathom how much suffering you go through, right? And I think to show any amount of support to you for all the gifts that you've given everybody in the community, I think people would have enjoyed being able to help you in whatever way that they could. And I know that everyone's delighted that you're doing so well. But, you know, I can't imagine somebody stronger to fight something like cancer than yourself, because cancer picked the wrong person to pick on. When you think about where you are today and now that you're able to move again, what has this meant to you? We talked a little bit about it before we started the podcast, but what is What does training look like for you now? Do you have goals? Like what is, you're now in Hawaii. Like what is life like for you? What are you going to do with your jujitsu?
Emily, let me just like add something else to what we talked before. Like for example, like I post one picture doing chemo, right? Not long ago, like obviously long time ago, but during the cancer. And I was kind of smile, right? When I was doing the picture. But I was smiling because that's how I am. Do you understand? But inside was hurt, right? I was like, that day was terrible. The day that I do the chemo, like I get 2 days really messed up right away. As soon as I get the infusion, like right away was bad. But then I couldn't show myself different than that because I always like show myself a smile. You understand? And then that moment I felt like, oh, maybe people's going to see us like, oh, he's having fun. No, I'm not having fun. You know, it's been hard just like, and when I say all the people, I say like some people that maybe was going through something else like that. You understand? So I always felt like, oh, maybe I'm doing wrong. But then at the same time, that's how I like to handle my problems, right? So that was a lot of thoughts about that. You understand? Based on that, you know. But I think, obviously, Emily, I'm sorry, it's very easy to get emotional and talk about that, right? But like, but that was not much like a expectation. My doctor didn't give much expectation about go back training. You understand? That was really hard, Emily. Wasn't hard to be 1 year without training. It was hard to think about like, okay, maybe after a year, if I'm able to get out of this, okay, but I still maybe not going to be able to train. So that was really hard, right? So you can imagine that, right? So it was okay to go over that year. I think I always thought I can handle, but then I was like, oh, wait a minute, if I cannot train, when I say train, like, okay, maybe I can drill. Yeah, but I want to train you. I want to break a sweat. I want to feel like my opponent tried to beat me. Or if I cannot go back to that, it's going to be really hard. But obviously, I don't want to focus on that, right, Emily? Because I thought that would definitely wouldn't take me to a good place if I just keep thinking like, oh, maybe I'm not going to be able to train. So that was really hard for me. But then, like I said, like I prefer to choose my fights with a smile. I prefer to handle like my challenge like with the smile, right? Even it was painful, even it was being hard on me, you know. So I prefer to do that. And I think that kind of pays off all the time. Every time pays off. I always felt like, okay, I'm just handle that with happiness. Because I believe things were going to go better after. You understand? Even if it's been hard, I think after it's going to go better. And I'm glad I did that because, Emily, I'm able to train normal today. When I say able to train normal, like there are so many questions about like how my body will change after. There were so many like people say they're like, oh, you're going to have to do different after this. You're going to have to do that. You maybe not going to be able to do this. Maybe you're going to have to do that. So Emily, was hard because like my doctor didn't give much expectation, right? So I reached to someone after my surgery and asked like how was his surgery because he went through the same thing, he did jiu-jitsu, and he gave even worse expectation, especially for him who knows jiu-jitsu, who is able to train after the same surgery than me, and he gave like the worst scenario, Emily, that I could ask for. So I was like right away, I was like, why did I message someone to ask like how he's doing, what should I do? And Emily, today, like I'm glad I did that way. I'm glad like I choose to fight this fight with the smile because things went really well. Today I feel like I can train normal again. Do you understand? Like obviously I've been a year without training. So I'm dealing with a year without training, but I don't feel when I'm training just I'm dealing with like a being a cancer survivor, you understand? So I'm glad I didn't let that beat me up too much.
That's incredible. What is it like for you coming back to training and being in Hawaii, having to create your training again, as you said, and not always having access to the same training partners? And, you know, in your school, you have so many well-developed partners and athletes like, you know, Mateus and Cannon and all these wonderful people that train with you there. How is this experience for you having to do a lot of work to make the space for your training? Is it fun? Is it difficult? Is it a good challenge for you? What is this like?
it's definitely like a different and obviously not the easiest way to train over here because I don't have my gym yet. And it's very like a interest to think about because Emily, my gym in New York is I consider like a big gym in New York. I think probably it's like the biggest only jiu-jitsu gym in the whole New York City. And sometimes people think, oh, this is too big. Like people are not going to know my name over there. People not. I heard people complain about those things. But you have no idea how it's important to have options. When I say options, like a different training partners, a different instructor that you can ask different things. Like So I felt that right away now that I don't have my gym because I go train somebody else. I go train with friends. And unfortunately, it's not a big group, right? When I say a big group, like I go train with my friends and like I do one train hard and I do another train like not so hard. And I do another train hard and then another one in a different like a level of train. And then I was really surprised when I went back to the city and I trained with my students there. And obviously, I'm not trained like literally 100% yet because I'm afraid to get hurt because my body is not been trained for a year, right? So I went to New York City training with my students and it was at the same time that we did a belt promotion over there. So I was taking my time to do the promotion of my student and training during the day. It was amazing how I was able to make a whole train in the same level that I felt I want that day. I don't know if you're clear, but that day I went there, I was able to pick my training partner that I was like, that would give me like a very consistent train. And I think that's something that like I didn't realize I have for so long. And now that I have to build my own train, now that I rely on my friends to make a training for me, it's so noticeable for me. Like I don't have that many options, right? Sometimes I train one training really hard and another one not so hard and then another one really hard. So it's being very unbalanced, my training right now. And that's the reason why I feel like I need to open a gym over here so I can have the open to train every day. I can't wait till my kids go back to train because they just start training in New York City in my gym. And then we moved here like a year and a half ago. And then obviously after this year, like I feel like I have a lot to catch up. I don't want to waste any more time. I want to go back train like a consistent. So that's something that like sometimes people complain, oh, I go train a bigger gym and then like it's too many people. Like, oh no, but you can make a really small community in a big gym. That's what people doesn't understand. You don't have to be the best friend of everybody. You just like pick the people that you like, the people that you enjoy training. Those people will be like your everyday train.
So I remember for so many years when we were training together, and Tachi was a great training partner to me. We would always joke. She would always say, Marcelo is an alien because you never got injured and nobody ever beat you and you're always like in the best form. I think I don't know if maybe you're feeling this because of your recovery, but I definitely feel it as a female head instructor and as somebody who is trying to continue to learn and keep up with some of my students. But jiu-jitsu is evolving and changing. I'm not getting younger. You're not getting younger. Our bodies are getting older. And yet there's so many new people that are coming and they want to be more, challenge, grow. As a teacher and as a human, knowing that you are not going to get any younger and you can't trade your body and maybe you would never want to, how do you handle the, I don't know if it's right to say pressures, but like, how do you handle how much jiu-jitsu is growing and your humanity, like who you are as a person and your age, and how do you stay in it and how do you move and how do you stay safe when everyone will still want a piece of you?
Emily, definitely not getting any younger, but I'm literally trying to just enjoy all this, what you just said. When I say enjoy, I mean like I want a piece of this too. Like the juice have growing. Okay, I wanna keep growing together. I want my gym keeps growing. I wanna keep like having a good leader in front of Jiu-Jitsu. So I want to keep involved with Jiu-Jitsu. But definitely, like, I cannot do the same way how I did when I was 20 years old. So today, I'm literally trying to learn different things. When I say different things, not just learning the technique. I want to learn a different ways how to teach my students, right? Because today, everything has been involved. So I want to evolve in my ways to teach it too, right? But I'm just enjoy all this, and I'm just enjoy like all this exposure that Jiu-Jitsu has compared to before. So I'm literally like look in the good way, you know, in the good side, you know what I mean? But when you say like I was looking like an alien, that I don't look like I get angel, like many times I was just pretending, right? So that was something that I always did when I was training. That was something that I think I was really good to do that when I was competing. Like any pain that I have, I want to hide. I don't want my opponent to see that he make me feel like that move that he did to me. I don't want my student feel. I don't want my opponent to see that like I almost stepped on that triangle. That was danger. That was close. So that was part of like my training. You know what I mean, like don't show weakness. Don't show like you are hurt. You know what I mean. But today is different. So I'm glad today. Like today, different than before. I give a chance for myself to take a deep breath in the middle of a rolling. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm trying to say like when you take a deep breath, means like, oh, you need to take a deep breath. He's tired, you know. Today I give myself that chance. You know what I mean, but I'm enjoying to see the sport grow. You know what I mean. But at the same time, I'm just trying to be wiser than when I was 20 years old.
What has, in the time that you've been practicing jiu-jitsu, so much has changed, and what do you notice about it now? If you knew then what you know now, finish that sentence for me.
Oh, Emily, it's good to know that everything will be okay. You understand? Like, it's good to know that like you're in the right path. And I didn't know that before. That was like that was always in the back of my mind. I was spending so much time and energy, and I didn't know that if I was doing the right thing. When I say doing the right thing, like did I train enough? Did I'm like a young enough to still be able to become a black belt world champion? I didn't know that, right? So those are the questions that like was always on my mind. I was like, did I'm training the right way? So today, like it's good to have somebody to tell me that, you know what I mean? So today I try to tell my students like, look, just do this. You're going to be all right. You know, like you're doing the right thing. Just stay focused on this. Just don't get distracted. Doing that, you're doing it right. You know what I mean? Like just keep going. You know what I mean? Things like that, you know?
What do you think? Do you think this sport has evolved for the better? Like, what do you notice as a fan and as a spectator of jiu-jitsu? What do you see in jiu-jitsu today that's different?
I believe jiu-jitsu definitely is been getting better, and especially the competitors that is getting better and with a lot more technique than before, but not necessarily like they evolve in the best way possible, because I believe, Emily, they still can evolve in a better way. And I say better way, like I wish like the competitors today was still looking more for the submissions, like we're still looking more for the finish of a match, not just wait for a referee give you the decision of a match. Then like, so I believe the competitors are getting better, but not necessarily they're getting better. You just look for submission, right? Obviously, we have different people like that are definitely doing that, you know what I mean? But I wish it was more people. I wish it was more competitors like focus on that.
Amazing. Something that I try to emulate, or that I believe in, that I think I picked up a lot from observing you in your school, was when it came to promotions, particularly with black belt. It was interesting to see that for you, a black belt, that a black belt from you didn't necessarily mean that you were just like the toughest guy in the room, but your character mattered. I feel like for you, it mattered a lot that the person you were going to give that black belt to was a good human. And I think that this is a wonderful quality. And I think about this often, you know, even as I promote my own black belts, because I think it's good for us to acknowledge people that are doing the right things, because there's so many people out there doing the wrong things. And everyone knows how difficult it is to get a black belt from you, and they really cherish the moment if they ever receive it. What does the journey mean to you from white belt to black belt? And when you decide to award somebody their black belt, what thought goes into it?
Emily, I feel like a jiu-jitsu and a black belt is almost like a tool that you've been given, a tool that you should be using, that tool, a tool that should be used in the right way. You understand? And being something so important for me, every time I feel like I'm pass it on my black belt. When I say my black belt, like my standards of black belt to somebody else, like I wish was always someone that take a good care of that. When I say take a good care of that, make this something big, try use that on your favor and on the favor of other people too. I just wish people realize how much you can change people's life when you're black belt, because you have a chance to show your moves. You have a chance to maybe somebody that's looking up for you. So just give a good example. So that was part of why I try and make such a high standard from people that I give my black belt. But at the same time, I realized with all these years, Emily, with over 100 black belts that I have given, I cannot control everybody. I cannot guarantee that everybody will gonna follow those high standards, that philosophy, and don't hurt myself too much. You understand? If people maybe decide going a different path, you understand? I put my standard, but at the same time, I cannot guarantee. You understand?
Yeah. About following different paths, something that I think is difficult for all of us who teach, I'm going to imagine, is sometimes when students change, for whatever reason, they need a different type of challenge, or maybe there's something that they're interested in doing and we aren't able to offer it. And for someone as important to jiu-jitsu as yourself, when you've had students come and go, what do you think about anything? Is there ever a feeling that this is right, like they should move on? Is there a feeling of sadness? Because I think at any time I've been in a situation where I've had people or training partners close to me or students that want to move beyond and evolve, as a teacher, I always think, this is their journey, this is their path. I'm glad that they were with us for the period that they were, and I hope that they continue to enjoy their journey in jiu-jitsu and that they do something good with it. But I feel like this is always it's a hard thing to deal with sometimes. And so how do you feel about people changing their path, changing their direction, especially if they've been part of your team or if you've given them something meaningful from yourself?
Emily, that has taught me so much, those situations. And it's just as hard as for me, like it's for everybody else. You understand? And I have felt hurt, but at the same time, even those things I have tried learn from my instructors, my old instructors, even I have tried learn from their mistake, because this not only happened to us, happened back in the days too, happened with another generation, happened with our coach, so I have learned that from them too. But what that has taught me, Emily, is that the bad thing is just let it go. If you don't let it go, there's no move on. There's no move on for you, and then there's almost no move on for your students who has left, who has changed life, who has changed a city. Sometimes your students just cannot train with you because they're moving. So that happened. That have happened so much with me, having a gym in New York, and sometimes is a student that I really appreciate it, and for many different reasons, they decide to move on. And what has taught me is that if you let it go, Emily, they can come back. If you try hold, or if you just hold any upset for different reasons, sometimes you have reason to be upset, but I don't think it's worth to hold on to those things. And that taught me so much, because everyone that have left, I always feel like they can go back. They can come back, because I let them go. Yes, and they can go back. Obviously, depend like the way they left. There's different ways to come back, right? Sometimes it's just like enough to have a phone call or a talk and try to solve things out. But the only reason why people can come back is if you have let them go. So today is like a much more like a normal and simple way. Like people leave because they just move on. They just move to the suburbs, or they just have changed jobs. You know what I mean? I take that so much easier than before, because I learned that if you let them go, they come back. You know what I mean? So it's just like, okay, they move on. Life has changed for some reason, but there's a chance maybe they come back. So I always feel when somebody leaves, I always feel anyway, they may come back. There is a chance they come back. And that doesn't make me feel like upset as much, if you understand.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, all of my students that have ever, a lot of, you know, my school's in Princeton, so it's a big college town, and we've had so many wonderful people come for work or come for school, and then at some point we have to say goodbye to them. But something that makes me feel really good is when they come back. When they come back for a visit, when they come back because they decided to move back or they wanted to be closer to our gym, it's maybe one of the best feelings in the world, because you feel like you did something meaningful together, and they still want to contribute to that energy and to that culture. And for me, that's one of my favorite feelings, when I get to see an old student, or when I see old students succeeding, you know, like when they're wherever they go and I see them open a school, or they're winning competitions, or they're teaching and they're still training. It's something that I feel really good about, because it feels like whatever part of their journey we had a hand in, it was a good impact, and they're still doing something that we love, right?
That's exactly, Emily, what I say. But I use that for everything. You understand? Like when something happens, like, okay, like that must be, you understand?
Yeah. And you know, Tachi said this to me so many years ago, and it's maybe one of my favorite quotes. Tachi says, "You deserve the instructor you choose." And it's an interesting saying, you know, because you think, oh, like, do you choose your instructor? But yeah, I mean, you don't have to train in this place or that place. You make a choice to be somewhere. And maybe we all feel a little bit differently about how intentional that choice is. But I would say, you know, having been in as many gyms as I was in and wanting to go somewhere where I felt that it was about jiu-jitsu, it was about love, it was about community, I think one of the reasons why I have enjoyed being part of your association and your school for so long is because I couldn't think of two people, you and Tachi, really thinking about your jiu-jitsu as creating a home for people and making it about the art. You guys have always been so generous and thoughtful about protecting your people, protecting your students, even when you guys were going through difficult times. I remember when the school kept flooding in New York, and you guys always tried to make it good for everybody else so that we would believe that everything was going to be okay.
Yes.
And I look back at those times, and I know since I've moved on and done my own thing, you've had plenty of situations where you tried to do the same for your students and for your staff. But when people are like, oh, what is it like to train under Marcelo, or what is it like to be there? And I'm like, well, I've been with them now for over 14 years, and I don't see myself changing, because they've been good people and they've tried to do good things with their influence. And that means a lot today.
I mean, I really appreciate that. And what people doesn't understand, like, you just gotta try it out. You understand? Like, when you go to a gym, like, doesn't mean you, it's a marriage. You understand? You got that? Past a week, you're not happy. Like, you can leave. You understand? Like, and your instructor should let you go. Shouldn't be upset if you leave. You understand? Maybe they didn't really got what you really want. And Emily, that's why I have a difficult when people ask me, like, for a recommendation. I don't know if you ever fell in that position. But many times your student is about to leave and they move on to another state, and they ask, like, where should I go train? Like, can you know somebody there? And I say, I know a lot of people there. I know people. but I want you to go and try it out, because I know they will treat me in one way and maybe they will treat you in a different way.
Yeah, that's very smart for you to say that.
So I don't like to give a recommendation. I just like to give advice to go to the gyms and test it out. Like, I see, you're going to feel, especially if you're coming out for our gym, you're going to know like what, how you want to train. If it's confident on your own way, or if it's something like that, like, oh, it looks kind of strange. I don't think I like the way that people train over here. And then immediately you should feel if it's right or not for you. Do you understand?
Yeah. And Marcelo, I really respect that you said that you can recognize people might treat you one way. They might treat, you know, a blue belt walking into their school a different way. Because I think a lot of people at your level of stature and celebrity, they know and they don't care, or maybe some of them like it, but a lot of them will just use their position for, you know, influence in whatever way that they can. And they don't care who it hurts as long as it helps them. So the fact that you can recognize that you are in a specific position and that the way that people behave towards you is going to be different than everybody else, I mean, I think that just says a lot about your level of awareness. Because I'm not sure that's the first thing that people would think. You know, people probably think, oh, Marcelo's going to give me a good reference because he knows so many people. And because he knows so many people and they want to be good with him, they're always going to treat all of us the same. But, you know, you're right. A lot of people who have gyms out there, they don't care if you're a white belt or whoever you are. They might just not be great people, but they're going to be great to you because they want you to like them. I would love to know, just in closing, Marcelo, in your years, you've also become a wonderful father figure, and you have two great children with Tachi and a dog. What kind of a legacy would you like to leave for them in terms of, you know, you're going to bring them back into your sport, but what has it meant for you to be a father and to be this person who that you are in jiu-jitsu?
Emily, I worked really hard today when I talk. Don't be so emotional, because I can get emotional like very easy right now. If I talk about my kids, you don't believe like how quick, like I just like cannot even talk. I stop like so I'm gonna try to be quick so I don't get so emotional.
You're like Jerry gets emotional too.
So you understand. So Emily is like when we talk about something like that, like I consider myself a really happy person. I'm not happy every day, not all the time, but I consider myself somebody really, 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 no doubt I'm happy. So if I can find a way to my students find their own happiness, my students now, my kids to find their own happiness, you don't believe how win that will be to me. So if I can help or guide them a little bit to them to just find their own happiness, like like happened to me, I believe I would have done my job. You understand?
Yeah, no, that's really beautiful. And it seems like you guys have always looked out to create the best life possible for them. And I think as any parent does, we always think about being able to give our children things that we weren't able to have. And I certainly see you and Tachi making choices to give them a beautiful life. Marcelo, thank you so much for taking your time very generously with me. It's been a long time since we've had, you know, time to talk. You know, it's a lot of things have happened, but I do want to just let you know how much I appreciate you in my life and how much I appreciate your family in my life, really. Like, Tachi was my first female training partner that was very, very good and, you know, my size. And it was so meaningful to start working with you guys when I did. And I can't imagine what direction my life would have taken if I hadn't met you guys. And I still remember how scared I was to go to New York and visit your school, because I was afraid that somebody would catch me, you know, from my old school. And it's been such a wonderful, challenging, you know, at times very challenging journey, being with you guys in the adult division and getting married and having children and you guys having children and lots of things changing in our lives. But I'm so grateful for your happiness and for your health and the things that you've delivered to not just me and my family and my students, but to really like the greater jiu-jitsu community. I think you're a beloved treasure. Everyone's so thrilled to be able to know you, and I see how much joy you bring into people's lives. And thank you so, so much for sharing some of your stories and your knowledge with us today.
Thank you, Emily. You don't believe, like, I do really appreciate you too. I'm not the person that I'm always like calling other people, you know, to ask how they're doing. But because I feel like when you know people, you don't need to, you understand? Because when you see them, nothing has changed. That's how I like to feel, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to be able to be able to reach out and make this happen right now, so we can have like this talk and other people can listen to this too. Like, I really appreciate that. Even like, I know I need a little push, you know what I mean? I'm glad you pushed me. You wait for me like to schedule a date to do this talk. I'm glad you found back to get that push, because I start to think too much when I plan those things.
I only pushed because I knew how much the jiu-jitsu community would have loved to hear from you. And I want to just share one small story before I let you go. The kind of person Marcelo is. So some years ago, I was asked to teach a benefit seminar for a charity, and it was in Connecticut. And they had a headliner who accidentally double booked himself. And the organizer of the charity, Rich McKeegan, calls me and he says, "Oh my God, Emily, I have a major problem and I feel really embarrassed to ask you, but I don't know if maybe you can help." And I said, What can I help you with?" And he said, "You know, I had this headliner for this charity and it's to benefit autism. And I know you're going to be, you know, teaching with us on one of those days, but the main person just can't come now. And I don't know what I'm going to do. Everyone that bought tickets is going to, they need a big name to come. And I'm not sure, but like, I'm trying to think of people close by who can do it because it's in 2 weeks. And do you think that maybe Marcelo would be able to do it?" And I said, "You know, I can't promise anything, but I can ask, you know. I'm not sure what they have going on." And I texted Tachi and I said, "You know, this is happening. Do you think Marcelo would be interested?" And she wrote back, "Yeah, I think he's interested." And we spoke on the phone, and then I connected you with Rich, and you went and taught at his benefit charity in a couple weeks. And for those of you that have never had the opportunity to be in the presence of Marcelo's generosity, that's the kind of person he is, that he went out of his way to just help somebody, and, you know, through a small connection. And so, you know, I'll leave that story with everybody, because that I think demonstrates what kind of a human you are. And Marcelo, thank you so much. I think we're all going to really look forward to seeing what new adventures you're up to. And I heard you say you might open a school in Hawaii, so I'm sure a lot of people are going to come visit, including us.
Who can visit me?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be excited to come train with you in Hawaii. So best of luck to you in building that. And do you have anything that you'd like to say to the jiu-jitsu community at all before we wrap up?
Emily, that obviously, there's so much we still can talk. You know, I feel that way. I don't know if people get bored or get tired, you know? But I just like to people know that, like, I'm the type of person that I don't like take time to write to people or just kind of like send a message to people, because I'm the type of person that I like to talk to people. I mean, I literally, like, if I can stop with people to talk, I talk all day, you know what I mean? But then sometimes I don't like, and I don't take the time to just kind of like being there in the internet to send message to everybody, you know what I'm saying? But I'm the type of person, anytime you stop me in the street, anytime you're in the gym after training, you want to talk, like, I can spend my whole life talking to people, you know what I mean? In person. That's how I feel. I like to live my life. I don't know if that makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense. And I remember one of the first times I met you, we were flying to California, and you and Tachi were on the airplane that I was going to get on. I don't know. I can't remember if I ever told you this, Marcelo. So Jerry was a big jiu-jitsu fan. And I was waiting to get on the airplane and Tachi taps me on the shoulder because I think she saw me at a tournament or something. She's, oh, hey, like, I saw you fight. You're going to California. And I think this was, must have been like 2007, 2008. And I don't think you spoke that much English because I remember turning around and looking at you. And I think I said hello and you said a couple of things, but then you smiled and you waved. And you didn't speak a lot of English, but at the time I was like, wow, what a nice guy. And Jerry, when we got on the airplane, he's like, oh my God, do you know who that was? And I said, I think that was Marcelo Garcia. He's like, oh my gosh. And so many years later, your English is amazing and you can communicate and talk so much. So I think everyone's delighted to talk to you. So maybe this is our first podcast, but it won't be our last one because it'll be lovely to hear all the updates from you.
And that's the problem. Sometimes I'm pretty shy to start a conversation, but once I can keep going. But sometimes that's the problem. Sometimes I keep overthinking too much. You know?
Okay. Well, Marcelo, thank you so much. And, I think I'm sure people will be excited to hear and talk to you again soon. And from the highest levels at BJJ Mental Models, this is Emily Kwok signing off with Marcelo Garcia. Thank you for this very special episode.
Thank you.
This has been a BJJ Mental Models production.